Hello and welcome to episode 322 of the ZA Tech Show for the week of the 23rd of February 2015. I'm Brett Haggard. Thanks for joining us. Today in the studio, we've got the Game Boys. I'm going to call you guys the Game Boys because Dion Duplessis, sitting here to my right,
Hello.
He has the raddest job in the world, according to everyone else outside of this office. In that, Dion's job is to write about games, review games, and play with games every single day of his life.
I literally live, eat, sleep, breathe games. It's great. That's awesome.
And that, of course, is Mr. Sean Benkin from Telkom Mobile, who by day tests all forms of rad cellular equipment, makes sure it works on the Telkom Mobile network, gets to play with stuff that doesn't even come to South Africa a lot of the time, delve really, really deeply into the technical details, but more importantly, spends all of his free time playing games also.
That is true. Good man.
So, gentlemen, thanks for joining me today. Let's jump straight into it, and I'm quite excited to have Mr. Benkin here today because we're a week away from Mobile World Congress 2015, which sadly, Sean's not attending this year. He tells me he hasn't actually ever attended a Mobile World. I don't know whether you should feel happy or sad about that, Sean.
Well, look, I'm fairly lucky. Generally, I get to see the devices before they get announced at Mobile World, but this year, there's been too many leaks in the past with the manufacturers, so they're very closed about what they're launching this year.
Absolutely. And the moment we get into it, we'll reveal some of that kind of stuff. But I think let's speak about two devices that I think the world's very, very excited about at the moment and where the vast majority of those rumors and leaks have been centered. Of course, what I'm talking about a lot of people are divided on whether they think these are the best devices at the moment. Android kind of ranks top of the pile when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because Apple, of course, is a completely different schedule. They don't acknowledge the existence of the rest of the cellular device world. they sing their own tune. But we're talking, of course, about Samsung and HTC's offerings, respectively. So let me start off with this, okay? The innovatively named Samsung Galaxy S6 follows on from the innovatively named Samsung Galaxy S5. If the rumors are to be believed, we're looking at two versions of that, all right? One is from the leak pictures we've seen so far, it resembles very, very closely the iPhone 5S in that it's got a very square bezel around the outside. So Remember, it almost looked like a squashed hockey puck.
Yeah.
All right, what was what the S5 looked like. And this seems to take that very flat bezel all the way around to the next level. The photos we've seen have been the phone on its face and on its back, and it seems there's no curvature around the edge or whatever the case is. So that's the one version. And the other version, which I'm quite excited about because I thought this was the most innovative product that Samsung launched in the past year, is an S6 that resembles that same curved edge as what the
Note 4 Edge had.
The Note 4 Edge, exactly. And the interesting thing about that is the rumor right now is that we're going to have this curve on both edges of the phone.
Well, the image I'm looking at now seems to show that it's curved on both sides.
Yes, absolutely.
So the chances are it's very likely going to happen. I don't know, form over function.
Well, look, you know, I was quite intrigued by the edge, and let's start with that. I was quite intrigued with the edge because a lot of people looked at it and kind of went, I don't understand what this little curved edge is, you know, designed to do. But when I was in the States last year for Intel Developer Forum, I was, like everybody that travels, we run down to the first T-Mobile or AT&T store or Vodafone store if we're in Europe, and you buy yourself a data sim. It's one of the first things you do when you're there so that you at least have connectivity. You stick it into a MiFi or into a spare Android device, turn that into a hotspot, and then great, you're online and you can tweet and you can Instagram and you can check your mail or whatever. And I was there while they were demoing the Note 4 Edge.
Yes.
And it's a fantastic idea. I really like the way that little screen is addressable as a separate screen. It looks like a uniform part of the rest of the device. It's not separated. But again, your quick launch icons, you can have it scrolling a ticker. And quite useful is when you switch the device off or you put it into standby, you can have
that little edge keeps running.
Yeah, but you can have the time, for example, displayed, the weather displayed, what your next appointment is, maybe like a little breakdown of you've received two SMSs, one WhatsApp and you have 15 unread mails, yes, whatever the case is. So I think it's really, really useful for that, specifically because you can put it face down or face up and, yes, still see that little screen. So that's kind of cool. How they're going to integrate that with two sides to this now, I don't know.
More shortcuts, most likely.
Or maybe the one is going to be kind of more centric around the ticker type stuff, and the other one will be for shortcuts. It
may be variable. It may be very customizable what you can do with it. You can do the scrolling, the tickers for your social feeds on the one side, and then your emails and your messages and those things on the other
side.
How
did you find the whole dynamic of it? Did you think it works as a, you know, I was quite excited about it because it was something new Samsung did, firstly. That was very, very new and very innovative. Yes. No one else had that, firstly. And secondly, Samsung and the majority of not Apples in the world, when they do new things, it tends to maybe not achieve what you wanted. This, yes, I thought was a really, really good idea, and it was executed extremely well, all right? Normally, you need a more design-centric company to come up with the idea, and then someone else will, yes, follow, right? At least that's historically been the fact. And Samsung came up with the idea and executed it really, really well. So that's what I liked about it. But, I mean, in terms of actually using it, do you think it would serve a purpose?
So, unfortunately, I can't really comment. I'm going to speculate because I never received the device.
Okay.
The reason was Samsung didn't bring it into South Africa because that little curved edge almost doubles the price of the device.
Yes, yes. Apparently, it is quite a lot more.
So none of the operators in South Africa, as far as I know, opted to list it.
Well, this is the thing. It was technically available to the market, but none of the operators decided, yes, to list it. Yeah.
So, look, I agree. It's probably one of the best new innovations in mobile in quite a while. And as with everything, you might seem, oh, this idea is, it's a bad idea, but the more people adopt it, the more functional it will become.
Well, this is the thing. It has its own SDK available for it. You know, as is, yes, you know, as is the case with most of the little Samsung innovations, S Pen, et cetera, you've got an extension to the,
yes,
normal SDK and you can make use of it. Dion, one of the things they said it would be really, really cool for is gaming. Now, again, could you see something, a phone with rolled over edges to the screen being useful for gaming? I know that, you know, it would possibly add another cool element for controls. Think about it from the perspective of you know, putting up additional information in terms of the game's stats, info, whatever the case is, up there in that extra screen. Do you think it's something it would take?
I think it probably would depend on the developer, how talented they are. But I could totally see little extra controls being added. But I would have to see a lot of different developers trying different things before we sort of, you know, get onto that one thing that's going to work and blow everybody away. Mobile gaming is very much up and coming. There's a lot of people paying a lot of attention to it. But we'll just have to see what they come up with.
Because, I mean, that's the other big question. I mean, when we talk about mobile gaming, we talk about the fact that Samsung's last big announcement also included a set of VR goggles that make use of the Note, yes, device. You clip it in and then, and I mean, it's astoundingly good. You know, it was developed with Oculus VR. So it was really, really impressive. I had a chance to play with that. And I was actually hugely impressed by how cool that was. But again, it's one of those things that you have to ask as a game developer or as a developer for Android, all right? Do you think that the Samsung installed base is big enough to develop a feature built into your game or something built into your game that is going to be Samsung specific? Well, yes, they have the predominant market share, but are you going to exclude the other, you know, the other vendors that don't have this kind of thing by building your game specifically for their platform?
Well, I think it would add an extra element, but if you look at the applications like Xbox One Smart Glass and the PlayStation 4 application, which gives you extensions to your games on your mobile phone.
Sure.
It would be over and above that. So it would be something that would have to be additionally developed to fit in.
Yeah, so almost an extend, like you'd have the Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge edition.
Yes.
Of the game.
Well, not of the game, of the application. So
yeah,
the game would include whatever, and then the developers just need to choose what information they choose to display on that extra piece of screen.
Yeah, I suppose that is that. So you're really just relying on the application to be more device aware rather than just screen resolution, knowing, yes, that there's a second screen available.
Absolutely.
And knowing how to make use of it. Okay, that's a good point. The The other thing that I found interesting about these rumors, and of course, let me just publicly disclose that they're rumors until Sunday next week when they will become fact, because that's just how the industry works at the moment. The rumors tend to be extremely accurate, yeah. So we can expect these things to be there. The interesting thing for me is, especially with S6, there was always two versions of the S6, so that's not new. Or sorry, the S5, the S4, etc. But it was only differentiated by what processor was inside. You either had the Samsung processor, you had the Qualcomm processor.
The main difference, there were actually several models of those devices for different markets.
Yes.
So for the Galaxy S5, you had the J and the H and the K, where the J would be your open market sample, for example, or your open market device, and the K would be the Vodafone one, and the other one would be the MTN one.
But from a physical hardware perspective,
they were almost,
apart from some chips inside or maybe a frequency change here and there, there wasn't too much.
They were mostly identical.
Exactly. So that's kind of the point I was trying to drive at. And I think with the most recent version, at least the two versions we saw in South Africa of the S5, you had one that had the octa-core processor in, and very notably no LTE. And then you had the Qualcomm derivative, which had LTE built in.
Yes.
And apparently that's going to be the one big major change now, because the octa-cores will actually come with LTE.
Yes.
Intel's also done a lot of work in the background, and they're making sure that LTE is now going to be a standard part of these devices. I'm pretty sure Qualcomm will be the only ones with like an LTE Advanced or whatever the case is, but you'll have LTE across the base. What I find interesting about this announcement is the fact that there are two physically different devices. And I don't know what that actually signifies. We can speculate wildly about what that signifies from a trends perspective, but maybe they're really starting to identify that one size does not fit all.
Yes.
So then you have separate devices, but interesting that you have them both launched as S6 flagship devices.
Well, so it's the same as with the Note and the Note Edge, or the Note 4 and the Note 4 Edge. You've got your Note 4, which is the flagship, and then you've got the derivative, which is the Edge, which adds the additional functionality, which is part of Samsung's new strategy. So they're streamlining the production on all the other models. The A3, the A5, the
yes,
A7.
Correct, yes.
And then you get the flagship devices, which is your S device and your Note device.
Yes.
Which gives them maybe a little bit of more room to play.
Yes, sure.
I don't know. It's interesting for them to diverge into these two.
Yeah, indeed. So, what I would speculate, though, is what it does tell me, at least the conclusion I would draw, was the first time they did this was with the Note devices, like you were saying.
Yes.
You had the Note 4, and then you had the Note 4 Edge, right? And I think that was clearly a successful strategy, because they've employed that same kind of effect again now with the S6. So, either that, it was either successful, and they're very, very happy with the results that they've achieved, or they're giving it a bit more time, and actually, it's a clear strategy. But I think from here on in, at least for the interim, we're going to expect to see two devices that fit inside that flagship category, but at least are a little bit different in terms of the physical hardware, which I think is quite interesting.
Absolutely.
In itself, almost a la Apple with its iPhone 6 Plus and iPhone 6.
Well, you'd think that they both
same device, different screen, right?
Same device, different screen, and you'd think that hardware's nearly 99% compatible, one piece of software for them.
Yes.
It's not. It's a different version, IPSW, for each one of those phones.
Yes, that's correct. So it is quite interesting. Let's talk about the M9. Far less exciting, in my opinion, all right? The reason we're talking about it, obviously, is because it's the other big one that has been kind of speculated about wildly. I think it's greatly as a result of the fact that we pretty much know what the Sony Z4 is going to look like, and we pretty much know there's going to be a Sony Z4. Sony's just, we're not concerned, because they're consistently doing a really, really high-quality device. And they've almost disclosed, to a certain extent, a lot of the detail around Z4. So we're talking HTC One M9. Interesting, because I don't think they've gotten nearly as much traction locally as what they could have. And that's, I think, as a result of how the business was structured and them coming back from a place, like a really, really dark time in the company, at least in South Africa. But
well, no, not even in South Africa.
Internationally,
HTC almost closed their doors last year.
That's correct.
Until they released the M8 and the M8 Mini.
Yeah. But again, at least in South Africa, speaking to people that have got this device, it's really seen as an alpha geeks device.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
The alpha geek will look at it and go, that's the device I want because it specifically does this, and this for me. It's not the device that is going to be completely mainstream. From what we've managed to see, and this is the bit that's not so very exciting, is because it looks exactly like an M8.
Absolutely. Same lines, same color.
Exactly. It's and ironically enough, the M8 looks like the previous version did
like
as well.
The M7. I mean,
clearly, it's following a nice trend. But they've talked about there being a substantial upgrade to a number of features under the hood. What I like about it, HTC was one of the first companies to actually look at creating smaller megapixel cameras, but bigger CCDs for them.
Yes.
So not physically more megapixels, but just the lesser pixels take better quality pictures. So let more light in, et cetera, which I think is really, really interesting. We can expect the standard stuff to be there.
It's 3 gigs of DDR4 RAM.
Yep.
32 or 64 gig storage. The standard stuff that you get. The processor will, of course, be upgraded. They might shove more pixels into the screen. Upgraded to an IPS-like screen.
Where do you think the market sits at the moment in terms of those different derivatives of Android? I mean, when I say different derivatives, I think there's two sides to that. Like, firstly, the fact that there's not really something that can be called pure Android anymore. It's really difficult to get down to pure vanilla Android.
The only device that usually comes with vanilla Android would be your Nexi devices.
Yes.
From what I've seen, the closest to that is the Sony's.
Sure. There's a little bit of enhancement here and there.
But it's very clean. It's very close to what Google would ship them. And then you've got the HTC Sense customization. You've got the Samsung customization.
Sure. TouchWiz.
Yeah. But then your low-end and general manufacturers use what they get from Google. They'll probably change the boot-up screen and the boot-up logo.
But it is quite close to being vanilla Android.
Yes, it is.
Sure. So I don't know where that sits at the moment. Yes, you've got all of the applications available across everything else, but I think that, it's strange. It's almost like it's become a lot about the software. People have tested Samsung devices and gone, oh, this is great, or this is not for me, and they've moved on to a different Android device. But I think that at least between these two vendors, even though it's the same operating system under the hood, they behave very, very differently as devices.
Absolutely.
And I think that's quite an interesting dynamic too. We can't discount the software layer and what it does.
Yes.
The one that's going to be interesting for me as well, something I'm going to be watching really, really carefully, is Samsung puts a lot of value in these extra value adds, all right? They put a lot of emphasis on that. And every single time we see an iteration of a new Samsung device, it becomes a lot about what you get free with it. It's the free drop boxes and the free licenses for the additional software. And in the case of the Note, there's a whole bunch of custom software that they've had developed, from a productivity perspective and screenshot stuff and annotation stuff. It's going to be interesting to see what this next host of S6 stuff has under the hood because that bundle seems to get bigger every single time they announce a new device, right?
The base operating system on most devices these days, a compressed file for, let's say, a BlackBerry is about 2.5 gigs.
Okay.
iPhone 6 is about 2 gigs.
Yep.
And the Samsung S5 is almost 3 gigs.
Wow.
For that.
It's just a third of the...
Just the base flash.
A third bigger, yeah. Wow. But I'm saying it's like, extra licenses to audio streaming services and stuff like that.
It's value add because a phone is a phone. And the only way to sell the things these days is you need to add the value adds. So like the Dropbox they did, the additional OneNote software.
Sure.
Not the OneNote software, the Office Productivity Suite that came with a Note.
Yes, indeed.
Those kinds of things. So they have to be innovative in trying to keep selling their devices.
I think,
And it must be working because they're bringing out a new one every year.
Well, I think they're bringing out a new one every year because there's just this insane demand at the top end for the latest and newest.
That's also true.
It's become such a part of people's identity that, you know, they were, oh, you know, and I have it all the time. You know, we're in the same position as you in that we get new devices to play with all the time. And you find it at the Arbis thing. You're checking checking something out at Dischem, and you'd like take a photo of it with your phone. So it's like, ooh, is that the new, you know, XYZ? Is that the new? Da, da, da. So what's the best Android phone right now? So people will ask those kinds of questions of you. They notice what wearable you've got, for, you know, this week. And they don't know you from a bar of soap, but they see something new and immediately they ask. So I think that identity is also a really, really big part of it. But yeah, we'll see what happens. There's so many cool things this year at Mobile World that I'm looking forward to. If I looked into my diary, something that's jumping out at me is I'm seeing, Dion, the first time in my life, and a working fuel cell charger, which I think is kind of cool. All right, so it's made by a Swedish company. It's probably
that's that little
quite sizable
thing with, that you can actually put physical fuel in.
No. So this is a thing that works, that creates power using salt and water.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's like totally exciting. You can charge portable devices using it.
Wow.
So fuel cell technology, I mean, this is the thing. It's finally actually starting to manifest in physical. So you're going to need to probably pay an arm and a leg for this thing because, I mean, if it's free power, it's free power. Yeah. That's pretty rare. It's the convenience of not having to charge my little backup battery is going to be an absolute pleasure, I think.
Is it something that you'd be carrying with you? I mean, is it small enough?
Absolutely. It
fits in your hand as far
as
I know.
Yes. It's probably three or four times as thick of, you know, as an average smartphone, and about the same kind of form factor,
Nokia 2110.
There we go.
Bit of a brick, but yeah.
But funky design, bright green. It's got these slats cut in the top, clearly because it must emanate some heat or whatever the case is. But that's something I'm seeing, which I think is going to be really, really interesting. Microsoft's got some interesting stuff that they're going to be speaking about at Mobile World. They've got a press conference, and they've offered me some one-on-one. So clearly they have an interesting device strategy there, and I'm looking forward to kind of figuring out how that transition from the Nokia brand to the Microsoft brand is going. And if that integration is truly going to start reaping rewards. Again, I'm not the guy that looks at the balance sheets when it comes to that kind of stuff. I'm the guy that looks at the products because I think that's very, very telling. It's a completely different angle on it that I think is going to be cool. Ford is doing a lot of stuff in the mobility space right now.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of interesting stuff doing there.
They're probably one of the best in-car entertainment systems on the planet at this
stage. And what's interesting is they went via Microsoft's technology. They went via Microsoft Sync in order to get to this place. They're not using Microsoft Sync right now. In fact, they're using QNX from what I understand.
They're using QNX as the base.
So that's going to be really, really interesting. Alcatel-Lucent is always an interesting company to just hang around and just kind of, you know, lend an ear to because they speak about a lot of the network stuff.
Yes.
So they're speaking about 5G, they're speaking about voice over LTE. And while that's not a new concept, it's a lot of the time quite interesting to figure out how that actually manifests in your region.
And to see what their take is on that.
Absolutely. And then there's an interesting thing I've been invited to, which is called MWC Africa Night, which is all of the African telcos and all of the African vendors are kind of getting together for a gala dinner type vibe, and that's going to be interesting. But yeah, there's so much stuff going on. Mobile World is going to be interesting. And of course, we'll be recording from there, so that'll be kind of cool. Let's change tack a little bit. Well, not completely out of the mobile industry. Did you guys see this thing where this guy was hit by an Amtrak train while taking a selfie in the States? So firstly, it's generally not a great idea to go and walk onto a walking railroad track. In fact, I think it's illegal. So the footage shows this dude, the footage isn't uploaded on the internet. You know, the security footage, and this is how they know this happened. Him and his girlfriend were out on the tracks. He was on a trip from Tacoma to Portland when he stopped beside a river 3 miles south of Kalama, Oregon, to smoke and snap photos with an unnamed woman. And while that happened, they were taking selfies, and a train came past them, and they were like, okay, that's fine. And they were standing across the other tracks, and they didn't realize that.
The train was coming from the other side.
From the other end and hit them from behind. The man was killed immediately. The woman apparently survived. What I want to know is, why are the selfies they were taking not up on the net yet?
The phone was destroyed.
But interesting. So it's illegal. If you're caught, you can be charged with trespassing. But, you know, here's an interesting stat for you. Between 2013 and 2014, over 30 people in Washington State ventured onto the tracks and were killed by trains. I doubt they were taking selfies over.
Yeah, but you'd think these areas would be more clearly marked, warning, trains crossing or something.
I don't know, man. Yes. I know people. Even if things are clearly marked that says you absolutely should not do this, there's going to be someone who's going to go,
yes,
you know,
that's
what?
All, that's
that doesn't
also,
apply to
that's
me.
That's also true.
This is the thing. So how do we know that, you know, what it feels like to get shocked by an electric fence? Because
we've
tried it. Exactly.
Look, I mean, I know it's tragic that the guy got killed and all, but seriously, my sympathy levels for people doing such stupid things is not very high.
This is a Darwin Award winner in the mix.
Absolutely.
It's like, seriously, it's like, let's go take selfies in front of a moving train, right? In case you didn't notice, there's been a lot of movies made about this. Trains don't break well, right? No, from the Wild West to current day, they don't break all that well,
there's
right?
There's a reason they installed cow catchers on the first trains.
Exactly, exactly. Another interesting one from around the web that I thought was quite fun, and Bing Microsoft search engine comes under so much fire. In fact, it's you know, in amongst techie circles, it's still like, you know, a joke. I think it's really after Hawaii Five-0, the remake is, you know, because, you know, it's horribly sponsored by Microsoft.
Absolutely.
Right?
Shamelessly.
And it's weird. The hair on my arms stand up, and they're like, you know, what's the, you know, average rainfall in Seattle, Washington? I don't know. Why don't you just Bing it? And when they say Bing it, the hair on my arms, because it just sounds wrong, all right? It sounds wrong. But nonetheless, interesting one for me. Microsoft Bing correctly predicted almost every Oscar winner this year. So what? They got 84% of the predictions right. 21 of 24 Oscar winners. So the question I've got for you guys: do you think they were that obvious? All right, because I don't think they were. There were quite a couple of surprises for me in the Oscars this year.
I haven't actually paid any attention to the Oscars at all. The first thing I read was Bing correctly.
You're tuned into the wrong RSS feed, Sean. That's the problem there. Right? Dion, your thoughts?
I don't think it's a case of they were easy to predict. I think it's probably more a case of Microsoft's got access to buttloads of data that it uses its massive data centers to crunch, and it probably came up with those through lots and lots of computing smartness.
And petaflops worth of processing.
Absolutely.
Power.
Sorry, I stand corrected. 21 out of 24 Oscar winners was last year's predictions.
This year was 23 out of
this
24.
This year was 23 out of 24.
So what you're saying is 2016... place bets according to what Bing says will win the Oscars and make a fortune.
Aren't they using Cortana?
Sorry,
as the
okay, so hang on. Perfectly calibrated, 20 out of 24.
Okay.
All right, so the 20 out of 24 this year, last year was 21 out of 24. So strictly speaking, they've actually gone a bit backwards, but still, not bad odds. 84% of the results, or you know, of their predictions were correct.
Okay, so Cortana is basically uses Bing as the back end.
Absolutely,
because Cortana,
and that's what makes Cortana kind of a very interesting little silver bullet. Because there's no doubt about the fact that Siri, Apple's version of this, or you know, the one that kind of got this whole revolution going, is really interesting and UX'd well, and really really friendly and everything else. And Cortana's come under a little bit of fire for not being quite as polished as that.
Yes.
Cortana, of course, being inherited from a game that I'm replaying at the moment, because I'm actually playing my way back through the Master Chief Collection on Xbox One, which is fantastic, incidentally. I know that you guys aren't fans, because it's a little bit, there's not enough gore and not enough giant explosions and flying limbs, but nonetheless, I'm quite enjoying it. And Cortana, of course, is the digital assistant there, so I thought that was, you know, cool when they, yes, you know, decided to do that. But yeah, powered by Bing, that's a really, really big thing, because this is proving there's some real serious number crunching capabilities.
Absolutely,
built into it. It's a search engine. It's amazing.
Well, did you know that one of the guys on Engadget, he used Cortana to place bets according to how Cortana predicted sporting results. And he writes, after betting $8 per game in a total of 14 games in the Premier League, he's actually up £24.37.
I can't believe it.
Well, Cortana also successfully predicted the Super Bowl results.
This is the thing. Also famously called all 50 states in the 2012 U.S. elections.
Yes.
So Microsoft researcher David Rothschild, who works on this thing, I mean, it's his little project, this little side project of using Bing to predict stuff. I mean, the Bing prediction engine is super, super powerful. I mean, 50 out of... You know, 50 states, 100% correctly.
Yes.
You know, that's really, really interesting. So
the question is, how do we get hold of this data before the things happen?
Well, you see, now this is the next big thing. And you have to wonder, I mean, you were joking about this before the show, but when is the sports betting capability coming out? Because seriously, that's a seriously unfair advantage.
Definitely.
Anyway.
So if I quit my job in the next 6 months, you'll know why.
So let's get on to some fun stuff. And this was something that stuck out for me this week that I thought was kind of interesting. Also because it employs a certain amount of AI that was kind of cool. Dion, it's something that you actually wrote on HTXT this week.
Yep.
Voice-commanded RTS, There Came an Echo, is now available. You can go and like download it on Steam.
It's out tonight.
I will be getting it for myself tonight.
And
me as well.
And the whole idea with this is, again, it being voice-commanded, you have the ability to... So the basic premise of a real-time strategy is you've got some dudes and you command them around and they either shoot people or build stuff or any combination of the above. But that's it's a management game, essentially, but not micromanagement in the sense of a strategy game. It's a sim-type environment. This is kind of... You need to command some troops and they need to do some stuff. And... The idea is you don't have to point and click to move them around anymore. You can tell them what to do using voice commands, which I think is a really, really rad idea, right?
Look, it's been tried before, but this game looks like it might actually have that little extra something to it, because it's not just voice commands. You can also customize any command, any word to actually substitute for whatever command. So, you know, if you want to say, instead of say fire, you want to say amazeballs, you can totally set it up to do that.
Yeah.
Unit Which is A, probably also
totally
good
going
way.
To amazeballs. The hostile coming through because you've changed the word door to yes.
Amazeball that hostile in the hedge, you know, that sort of thing. But that's also a very clever way to get around a lot of speech recognition programs battling with, say, a South African accent.
I was going to say, because this is one of the things that's interesting. It's like having played with, again, I'm going to speak about Siri and you know, Google's voice search. And you know, voice command capabilities through wearables and all of this kind of stuff. It's been interesting that, you know, Google doesn't really give you the ability to do it. It kind of figures it out. But Siri, you've generally got to go and set to Australia.
Yes.
Okay, which is ironically enough closer to the US. And then when that stops working, you can switch it to the UK. And then you know, the idea is just to keep on rotating it around. But generally, the Australian accent tends to. Which doesn't make sense to me because I found them vastly different. Yeah, absolutely. But New Zealand, of course, is not one of the accents you can choose. You can choose Australia.
Because it's not one of the major markets.
Exactly. So you normally need to choose something that's as close as possible. But again, it gets it wrong because there's different pauses, there's different inflections in word and that, you know, words and that kind of thing. I think it'd be really interesting recording those customizations and seeing how accurate they are because I can say fire 20 different ways. So I think that's going to be the interesting one.
There's a
generally,
famous...
all of these voice recognition services rely on a big server or lots of big servers all kind of clustered together, sitting somewhere
sure
in the cloud.
I'm sure enough South Africans have used it that they must have built up some sort of database at some stage.
Sure.
You would think so. But, you know, for me...
You know, or you're going to have to speak like a Texan. Unit A. Going far there, y'all.
There's for me, it's a famous quote by Terry Pratchett that said, language is essentially just sounds made by monkeys to tell the other monkeys where the ripe fruit is. So, you know, the actual sound you make is irrelevant. If you can associate that sound with that command,
yes.
It doesn't actually matter.
But
so,
you explain that to a computer, I don't know. Either way, you know what? $175 is what it's going to cost you off of Steam.
10% discount for the first week, and you get a free game.
There you go. You get their first Sequence. Game. So the developer's first game. Iridium is the name of the developer. Sequence, a rhythm game meets RPG hybrid.
I still
what
don't
the
know
hell?
What the hell no, that means, I'll be honest.
Only if you pre-order, though.
Yeah.
Steam's page says you get Sequence for free in addition to the 10% discount. So I think it's valid for like the first week.
Okay.
How does the physical gameplay look, Dee? I mean, you've obviously looked at some of the videos and stuff like that. Does it look fun?
Look, looks-wise, it looks a little bit like Shadowrun from last year, which was a turn-based strategy game. But this is real-time, so obviously different type of game. Very slick looks. Will Wheaton does some of the voice acting.
Yeah, I think that's one of the coolest things is that you've actually got Will Wheaton and Ashley Birch.
Yeah, that's right.
As two of the main character voices.
Look, the actual real-time strategy parts look... like any real-time strategy game you could expect to play. But what the developers say is that they've actually focused a lot on story and character development, which will hopefully differentiate it from many other RTS games out there.
Okay, fantastic.
I always like a game that prioritizes story, so if you can put a good story on top of solid mechanics, I'm sold.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's interesting also to do that in a real-time strategy game, because really when you're talking about story, is the campaigns tend to be kind of a thing on their own, or each little, you know, episode tends to be a thing on its own, and then the storyline comes through what cutscenes and stuff like that they kind of develop in terms of backstory, which is interesting. But yeah, I think for $175, definitely worth a whirl. I mean,
absolutely.
Hell, it's like even if you just get like some really cheap entertainment at how badly those dudes start shooting each other in the face because they don't understand what you're saying, that'd be kind of cool. Yeah. Another story that you wrote for HTXT this week, Dion, that I found was really, really cool because, man, we've been having hell with traffic in the past 2 weeks here in the office. It's like people are like spending an hour on a commute, an hour and a half on a commute, which is like unbelievably wrong.
Yeah, my 15K commute takes me on average 45 minutes, and that's on a good day. It's crazy.
So soon you might fly to work, Dion. Do you have 250,000 Australian dollars lying around?
I don't have 250,000 South African cents, never mind Australian dollars. But if I did have it, I would totally buy this thing called it's called the Martin Jetpack.
Because it's made by a dude.
By a guy called Glenn Martin in New Zealand.
There you go.
And he's finally, after working on this thing for 34 years, he's finally perfected the concept of, he called it a personal jetpack. It's more like a strap-on helicopter, to be honest.
Yeah. So it's got two big-ass fans and a jet engine in the back.
Exactly. I don't think it's got a jet engine, but it's got these huge big fans that propel you.
I think it works on the same principle as the drones these days.
Yeah.
So with the counter-rotating blades, those kinds of things.
But basically, you can get 1,000 meters in the air. It does 74 k's an hour, and it lasts for about 30 minutes.
Very good.
And if you think about it, you know, back
not
in the day.
To get home or the office for me.
What I want to know is, like, what happens when you're 1,000 meters up?
And it stops working.
And you get a battery low signal.
A parachute.
You better have a parachute.
It must have something like that. It's an interesting looking thing. I mean, it's got these four giant feet coming out the side, and it's like, yeah, you're right. It looks like a helicopter duct taped to a dude's back.
You know, the thing that I always take heart with is you look at this and you go, that'll never catch on. But, I mean, they've said that about TVs, about cell phones, so you never know.
I would also say this about it. It doesn't look nearly as weird as that BMW C1 strange roll cage the bicycle attached. If you were prepared to drive one of those things, you totally wouldn't look weird with this strange looking
right down your
contraption.
Alley.
So check it out. That is the Martin Jetpack. Go Google it. I think it's very, very interesting. So you mentioned drones just now.
Yes.
And something that is super interesting was this whole cell phone jamming stuff that took place during the State of the Nation address recently, right? And of course, it's close to my heart because I'm a journo, and I was like, turn on the internet again, people. Come on, this is unfair. People need to be able to tweet. I want to see Instagram photos from Sona. But yeah, I mean, why invite the press in if you're going to block all the signal, right? So, this kind of content and news, by its very nature, needs to be real time. So, they subsequently came out and said that the reason the jammer was there. So I like the fact that they admitted there was a jamming device in the room. That was kind of cool. Apparently, it was a military-grade jamming device, all right? And it was to create a no-fly zone, but that's all they've said about it. Wild speculation thereafter to say that maybe they were trying to block drones. But again, you can't block a drone. Well, you know, maybe some of the off-the-shelf drones, but not some of the, like, professional stuff that the media is likely to actually use, right?
No, look, with enough power, you can block anything. So it doesn't matter how complex the modulation schemes are between the controller and the transmitter and the receiver. If you can overpower that signal, you'll be able to block.
So really what it's about doing, it's about flooding that frequency with a ton of interference, right? With a ton of chatter, okay?
Yes.
And then what happens is obviously nothing else can communicate to something else because the channel is 100% full of all of that chatter, right?
Yes.
But again, the point is, do drones make use of the frequencies that cell phones do? I don't think they do. I would imagine that already with all of this controversy around drones in the market and are they legal, aren't they legal, what spectrums do they operate in, et cetera, these smart drone manufacturers would be putting them in frequencies that aren't the cellular spectrum, right?
So most of the drones use Wi-Fi. In some way, form, or means. Now, your high-end devices use the 2.4 gigahertz band that is used in model
airplanes. Yeah, yeah.
You've got a range of over a kilometer with these things, and That's it. But as I said, with enough power, you can interfere with any signal.
Also, the other thing that, reading up on it, apparently what these devices are designed to do, because it's kind of just as dire to the drone as what it is to the devices it might be interfering with. It's got channel hopping capability built in.
Yes, absolutely.
So
you've got okay, your 13 can't, or 14.
I'm not getting, in the simplest terms, I've sent a command to the drone from the controller. I didn't get an ACK back. I didn't get anything back to say, hey, I received it and I should now turn left, right? It's got an algorithm built in, and the controller's got an algorithm built in that says, okay, let's hop to the next frequency and let's keep on hopping until we can find each other again. And then, so again, it'd make things extremely difficult to jam, right?
Those 13 channels, probably 50 megahertz separates those 13 channels.
Yes.
So it's not a wide band. So you just block that entire band. So it will destroy all the communications.
Okay.
It's the same with mobile phones. So the bands technically, so you'll see on your phone it says 900, 1800, 2100.
Sure.
But those can range from 850 to 950, under 2100 to over 2100. So there's lots of space in
between
those bands to work within.
The other big conspiracy theory is the reason this jamming device was there was to protect against the eventuality of a remotely detonated explosive device which had been planted somewhere inside Parliament.
I would agree with that.
But at the same time, haven't they watched too many terrorist movies? Because, of course, everyone knows that all remotely detonated bombs have a Nokia 2110 phone.
Yes, and you have to phone it.
Yes, absolutely. You have to phone it.
And then in
the Nokia software, which, in Symbian, you go and set it to answer after two rings. Am I right?
Yes.
Right? And then, bam, yeah. So, I don't know. Is it a bit conspiracy theorist? Is it a little bit paranoid? I don't know.
I think it is a bit paranoid to have gone through those measures, because if you've got a wideband frequency blocker, which blocks from... that would block your FM bands even.
Yeah,
so
sure.
From 90 megahertz up to 5 gigahertz, which is your current usable space for technology.
Sure. Also, why would you... resort to something that big? I mean, Steve Wozniak is well known to carry a blocker around with him. He carries something that's the size of a pen that, he designed originally to get rid of TV signals.
Yes.
All right, because he found that distracting. Somebody was having a conversation with him and they got distracted by the TV. So he just switched it on in his pocket, and then the TV and the radio would go fuzzy and they'd switch it off and then they could have a conversation. Yes. He's well known for doing that kind of thing. So again, why would you have this thing that looks like a giant flight case? Or is that literally the size of the device you'd need in order to block a frequency band that wide?
Well, yes, because you would have to have an antenna for each of the usable frequencies.
Wow. Apparently the antennas were unplugged, so... The photo that's been posted shows a device without any antennas actually screwed into the top.
But
that would affect the range, right?
Absolutely. So that's just for range. So if you were to take your Wi-Fi router and you were to unscrew the antennas,
you'd shorten the range.
That's basically all that happens.
Okay, interesting. Nonetheless, I think it's interesting.
Jam all the signals to the drone. I mean, if it was set to like an autopilot.
Well, no, because it then becomes a level of autonomy. Safety features. I know the DJI drones have got these safety features built in. So, for example, if it loses,
it just continues hovering.
It will hover, and then it's still got the sensors.
It's got a proximity sensor.
It will then go and find an appropriate place to land as close as possible to where it lost.
Because I mean, these things are kitted out with some mad AI at the moment. They don't just like try and avoid knocking into stuff. They're designed to recover from collisions with stuff. All right, and they're also designed to, because if you think about it, you're using a drone to film something or whatever the case is, and it starts running low on power. You don't want it to run out of power like we were talking about the jetpack at 1,000 meters and then blix them down to ground and like take someone's head off, right? So the idea is it's designed to gracefully land, but at the same time you can't just teach it to gracefully land. It should then also employ some of the sensor technology it has in terms of the cameras and stuff like that to go, I shouldn't just land on top of this thing. I should try and find something that resembles a safer space to land.
Also, I had one of the first AR drones when they came out. And that sensor, basically, you were told you can't fly over water. You have to fly over solid objects. You can't fly higher than 4 meters because then the sensor becomes ineffective. So I'm sure that the sensors have now... The technology has improved, so it will realize. Hold on, I'm over water, so it should be able to differentiate between terrain.
Yes.
Before actually setting down.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. Like we were saying, maybe you're just a little bit overly paranoid, man. I don't know.
Have they been watching too much 24?
Okay, so I want to throw something into the mix. It's actually just arrived on my desk right now, which I want to ask you. It's so cool. I've got the Game Boys in the room. They can story that's just broken on Kotaku. Which means, Dion, the moment we're done recording this, you're going to have to run back inside and find out more about this. There is a new Guitar Hero game coming.
Guitar Hero or Rock Band?
Guitar Hero.
Okay, because I know Rock Band got a bit of new DLC a couple of weeks ago, sort of fueling speculation.
But remember that Guitar Hero actually announced they were not making, Activision was not making sufficient money off of the franchise.
Yeah.
Because really? Famously, Guitar Hero Aerosmith and Guitar Hero Metallica made something like, they made more money off of that licensing deal than what they did in 5 years worth of royalties off their music.
Yes.
It was a great story, recently. And they then announced, Activision said no more Guitar Hero. The DLC was an entirely different story because that's its thing. But there were going to be no official games. And two separate sources, according to Kotaku, have now confirmed that there's a new Guitar Hero game in development for release later this year. Are we excited, guys? I mean,
hell yes.
You were a Guitar Hero. I mean, I love not just because of Aerosmith and Metallica. I mean, Dion's a serious Metallica fan.
I was
a big Metallica fan in most senses of the word. He's also 6'5", but he's also a huge fan.
I'm a big Metallica fan.
Yes, exactly.
Look, I was bleak when the Metallica DLC that I bought off the Xbox Live Marketplace disappeared for no apparent reason a couple of years ago. I can't actually get it anymore.
What?
I bought Death Magnetic
so
I could play it with my Guitar Hero controller because I can't play guitar. So the fact that this is coming back, this is very good news. I'm super excited.
So yeah, I mean, so Warriors of Rock was released in September 2010. By which time the global recession had already totally deflated the music game boom. I'm quoting here from Kotaku of the mid to late noughties. Activision officially killed the series in late 2011, having bought it along with its original publisher Red Octane in 2007. Though Kotaku reported that that an ambitious and troubled seventh game was in development at New York studio Vicarious Visions. So I think this is super, super cool. I think that's quite exciting. I was a big fan. I mean, I've subsequently moved on to Rocksmith, which for me suits me better because I actually do play guitar.
And you can use a real guitar.
Right.
And what's super rad is I'm learning riffs to some of my favorite songs, which I think is super, super useful. It's like I have a cool party trick. Whereas unless you have an Xbox handy and a controller and the disc and everything else, and hang on guys, let me quickly just show you how I 5-star this, you can actually pick up a random guitar and play a riff, which is kind of cool. But this is quite exciting. I think
they haven't mentioned which tracks are going to be featured, anything like that.
Nothing. They have just learned that it is coming. So it's interesting.
Yeah, sign me up. I'll definitely get that one.
Fantastic. I think it is. That's cool. That's really, really cool. Let's round things out with, I've got three stories here. I'm trying to figure out which one is more exciting for us to talk about.
Besiege.
Okay, let's talk about Besiege. But both Dion and Sean have promised me that we won't talk about the
not suitable for work portion.
The phallus crew. There's a bunch of people creating giant phallus type devices in Besiege. So okay, for those of you that don't know, it's a building game. You build stuff and these fantastic machines and with it.
Specifically siege engines.
Yes, exactly.
But it's up
things
to you.
That hurl giant things at other things,
yes.
Right?
Yes. But the beauty of it is it's up to you to figure out how to hurl anything. They give you no instructions, no tutorials, they just give you a bunch of blocks to play with. And it's like having Lego as a kid.
Yeah, and it's all kinds of levers and extending stuff and hinges, springs and hinges and all kinds of stuff. So that's very cool. And what I'm a big fan of is it kind of taps back into that Minecraft environment, from the perspective that Minecraft started out being this fantastic gaming phenomenon where a bunch of people really enjoyed making stuff and very quickly devolved into creative ways to arm yourself and kill other stuff. And now you have ender dragons and endermen and all kinds
and
of scary
Microsoft
stuff to go.
Added a story to Minecraft.
Yes. And then it was, and then Notch left. So
yes, but it did get $2.5 billion for it.
Absolutely nothing wrong, but. I think Besiege just kind of short-circuited that whole process and went, okay, let's not Let's not start at a really, really pure place and evolve into weapons. Let's just allow people to make cool weapons, yes. Right? And you've built some cool stuff, Dion.
Look, I thought I was doing pretty well when I figured out how to build my first catapult. And then I saw what the internet got up to. And oh my God, I'm an amateur.
You're saying there's a thing called a war corgi.
Please, do yourself a favor right now. Stop listening. Open up another window.
Or don't stop listening. We'll carry on talking. Just open up another window and yes, go look at...
This is the Jurassic Park in Besieged.
So somebody's actually built like a full-on Jurassic Park.
Oh, this is from this is the Kotaku highlight reel, but at some point it shows this. It's absolutely brilliant. The fact that... I don't know if you remember The Incredible Machine.
Yes, yeah. I remember. I loved The Incredible Machine. It's fantastic. So
this takes me back to that because you can go and you need to go and destroy that thing over there. Here is a box full of blocks. Figure out, build it, do it.
And then you kind of test how to do stuff.
Yes, and then fire and wood don't work very well together, so most of the machines get burnt up in the first 5 seconds of starting.
But that doesn't matter. As long as you can hurl at least one decent big flaming ball at that other thing, often that'll work. See, I love games that encourage, complete and utter creativity.
Well, games that they respect your intelligence. They don't go, you need your handheld. They go, here are these things. We know you're smart enough to figure out what it does, and you can come up with ways to make them all work together. Yes. So, yeah, go play.
So we like Besiege. I mean, how much time have you guys combined put into Besiege over the past past couple of weeks?
I might have it open at the very moment. my Steam playtime says about 11 hours so far.
Wow. Didn't you only download it like a couple of days ago?
Last week, Friday, I think.
Wow. Sean, you?
Not a lot, but I have an excuse. I was on holiday when it came out.
Oh, all right.
So I bought it when it came out. I played the first two levels, and then I came back, and I will be spending lots of time in the next couple of days.
Figuring out how to build giant flaming throwing things.
Yes. But honestly, if you want to check it out first, go and look up the War Corgi. It's WARCORGI. And just watch what this one particular guy did. He literally built the equivalent of a war machine in the shape of a dog. It is hilarious.
Okay, so we're right now looking at the Jurassic Park. Wow.
Oh my God.
There's like
incredible.
Actual like dinosaurs walking around and doing. That's amazing. Okay, that's impressive. This could be expensive, not in terms of actually buying the game, but in terms of like the productivity hit. Wow. I'm sure not letting my kids loose on this, believe me. Their marks will go through the toilet.
I don't know. Their science marks will probably improve.
Yes. And if they put any engineering subjects.
Okay, so that's Besiege.
$6.99. It's early access, so they're always building. They're always adding to it.
Wow.
And in fact, a new update came out last night that adds a couple of little new gadgets to it, including a balloon, an adjustable inflation balloon. So definitely, do yourself a favor and go check it out.
What platforms is it available for, Dee?
It's PC. They've just added Mac. I don't know if Linux support's there, though.
Okay. You think it's likely to ever end up on console?
I don't know. It's a little bit intricate. I don't know if the controls aren't going to be a bit too fiddly for a controller. But I've heard no plans.
Minecraft made it onto consoles.
This is what I'm trying to say. It's like, and essentially, Xbox One is really just a heavily modified version of Windows now. So,
yes.
You know.
Unfortunately.
Anyway. Okay, I'm going to sneak one more story in because I thought this was kind of cheeky because I ended off with Microsoft there. Microsoft and so what do we think about this? Microsoft luring Dropbox users to OneDrive with a free 100 gigs worth of storage for a year. I think it's kind of cheeky that you need to be a Dropbox user in order to activate your 100 gigs free SkyDrive storage, right? No one's yet developed an API that allows you to just say, please import everything in Dropbox across here. You have to do it yourself, right?
And there's no using data in the cloud. You're still using your PC or your data connection as whatever.
As a conduit, as a pipe.
So you're going to download your 100 gigs worth of data from Dropbox and you're going to upload it to OneDrive. That's 200 gigs worth of data.
See, I would consider this if there was a button I could click that said,
migrate.
Sync these two and do it in the background. Mm. That'd be extremely rad. And then all I had to do was just switch over locally and start using SkyDrive. Who would you rather be on right now, Dropbox or SkyDrive? Dee?
I'm a big Microsoft fan. I probably shouldn't admit in public, but I really do like this stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
I quite like Dropbox. With this offer, I've switched over to 127 gigs of available space.
On OneDrive?
On OneDrive, yeah. Honestly, though, I'm not using nearly as much of it as I probably could. I mean, that 27 gig I had before I swapped over, where I did the Dropbox thing, it's hardly using it. So, yeah, it may be overkill.
Yeah, might be. I find it really, really useful for backing up photos and stuff like that. I have yet to find a service that inspires enough confidence in me for me to delete my photos from my local drives because, yeah, you know, that's kind of worrying. But the choppers are overhead. The choppers are overhead. Oh, no, where's your blocking device? Where's your blocking device? No-fly zone. But, yeah, there's a link actually on the HTXT website. But if that doesn't work, go to preview.onedrive.com/bonus. And it's a gift to current Dropbox users for installing OneDrive. Kind of cheeky, right? I think that's...
Oh, that's marketing for you.
Yeah. You know what? They'd never get away with it here, but because they're both US companies, they get to do it there and kind of exports locally. So, yeah, for sure. Gentlemen, should we jump into picks of the week? Sean, I know you've got a couple, and I know that Dion has at least one. So let's start on the far side of the table. Sean Benkin, what did you bring to the ZA Tech Show to rave about or hate on this
week?
Well,
no, so my rave is Besieged. I really love the idea and the concept behind the game. It can be probably one of the most ultimate time wasters you'll ever find.
Wasters? No way.
In other people's eyes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. So you're going to pick it without having played it yet? You've obviously watched all the videos. Oh, you have played it. Okay, you have played it. Okay, very good.
That is definitely why I am picking it.
Okay, cool.
And I've just double-checked, by the way, is available on Linux as well.
Oh, very nice. That's another decent... Everybody should just buy the games that are available on Linux because...
Yes, because they're available on Linux,
which I think is cool. Because the whole idea is, like, ultimately, that's how we're going to see Steam boxes really, really get big, is to make sure that... Because, yeah, those custom-built Linux boxes that run Steam. Dion, what do you have this week?
It's possibly a little bit dull, but I'm currently using a SteelSeries 6G V2 gaming keyboard. I haven't really used a lot of mechanical keyboards in the past, and the sound of Adams firing away rapid machine gun style has driven me a bit nuts at times in the office. But having used this, honestly, it's the most comfortable, most satisfying keyboard to use that I've ever actually typed on. The sound of the keys, the feel of the feedback, and the layout is just what I'm looking for.
So it's a 6G?
6G V2.
V2. Okay, cool.
Goes from anything from $950 all the way up to about $1,186.
How's it changed your gaming experience is the question. I mean, could a keyboard really influence it that much? I mean, I see you guys with these fancy mice in the office. I mean, these ones with little... you like... adjust them and they get wider and taller and it's like, wow. All right.
It depends on the level of professionality of your gaming.
Yeah. Normally when I buy a mouse, I go to the retail store and I feel a couple of mice and I feel, oh, that one's kind of comfy. Okay, let's go with that one.
My gaming needs are pretty straightforward, though. So I find that the keyboard doesn't necessarily have that much of an impact on the way that I play games. It's more for typing and doing work.
Okay, interesting. And is it one of those cool ones that like has like customizable lighting at the back and all
that
stuff?
No, it's actually very straightforward. It's heavy. It's quite compact.
And it's mechanical, right? So it actually has a full spring.
And everything about it just screams high quality. So, you know, it may cost $900-odd, but I think it's worth it.
Very good. Like it. So, my pick of the week, I'm going to do two. The first one I'm going to do is, I'm going to apologize in advance because this is a little bit of a cop-out, guys, is the ZA Tech Show listeners. So, you guys have been so ridiculously patient with us. I want to say thank you for that. It's the last time we actually recorded an episode in 2014 was like early December, and there was a bit of a lag before that, and it was mainly because we were working so hard at HTXT to get certain things where they needed to be there, and then I was very remiss at the beginning of this year. I didn't put a whole episode out the whole of Jan, and we started recording again in December, and I put two episodes up in the past week, and we've had huge downloads on them. So I want to say thank you very much for that, and a shot for all of the comments and all the kind words on Twitter and Facebook. If you guys want to, you are more than welcome to like share it with your friends. I think that'd be super, super cool. My other pick is an iOS app that I downloaded. It's made by a company called Prezi, which we like a hell of a lot because what it does, it simplifies the whole process of making presentations, and it makes them kind of cool, and they all host it online and stuff like that. It is a app called Nutshell. So essentially what you do with Nutshell is you take three photos, add some text to it, and you create these like tiny little three-photo type prezos that you can then post to Facebook, like a before, during, and after photo with like a clever little thing, clever little caption or whatever the case is. I think that there's great potential in that kind of stuff to catch on. What I like is it hasn't been designed specifically to sit inside its own little social network. The fact that it's designed for making posting to Twitter and Facebook more interesting and more exciting. So check it out. It's called Nutshell. It's free. It's brand new. I think it's an interesting little side project. Again, like I say, you take three photos, you kind of stitch them together with like a clever little caption, and they kind of there's like various animations and bits and pieces you can play with. But I think that is going to go places. I find it quite exciting. And there's nothing else there that's doing that at the moment. So it's like it evolves Instagram just a little bit. It's not a Vine, you know. So yes. So that's kind of rad. Check it out. It's called Nutshell. So gentlemen, if there's nothing else you guys would like to speak about, speak now, forever hold your peace.
I'll just say go watch War Corgi again.
I just watched it and I had to be careful not to snot all over the microphone.
So there we go. I think we have the name of our episode. We're going to call it War Corgi. I like it. Thanks for that, Dion. But there you go. Guys, thanks for hanging out and chatting about gaming and all kinds of random arbitraria on the internet today. Sean, thanks.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Dion?
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Thanks for taking some time out of your work day. And that's it from me, Bretzky. Guys, if you are interested in listening to some of our other podcasts, I've created multiple feeds off the back of HTXT. So the first thing is go to zats.htxt.co.za, and there you'll find the full archive of all of the episodes of ZA Tech Show. There's the last 5 episodes in separate posts. There's also another post there that's got a link back to every single episode, back to episode 1 that we've done. It's not very elegant. It's just a really long list of links, but you can at least grab the MP3 if you want to listen to them. And you're going to have to be a super fan to do that because, wow, there's some stuff there that I'm not even, all that comfortable with the fact that we recorded and put out there. But nonetheless, that's all there at the moment. So that's on zats.htxt.co.za. If you append a /feed to the end of that, you can then stick it into any podcatcher you want, and it should automatically update based on our RSS there. Obviously, you can also resort to iTunes. iTunes, for me, is one of the slickest ways for me to get my podcast. Search for ZA Tech Show, and you'll find it there. Of course, we do produce another podcast called the HTXT AfriCast, which is a little bit more newsy, a little bit kind of shorter, and a little bit more kind of to the point. That is available on africast.htxt.co.za. Again, just append a /feed onto the end of that if you want to get to the RSS. And then if you go to podcast.htxt.co.za, you're going to get something called the master feed. So off the back of that, you're going to get a feed that has both the AfriCast and the ZA Tech Show in. At the same time, you can search for htxt.africa on iTunes, and you'll see it come up in that list. It's called the master feed. If you subscribe to that, you'll get both episodes of both podcasts as and when they happen. Of course, you guys can always comment on the stories right on the website. We'd love to hear from you. If you listen to an episode, you've got something you'd like to add or comment on, feel free to go to the website, htxt.co.za, and make those comments there. At the same time, all of our email details, everything else are available on htxt.africa, which is htxt.co.za for the moment. Come on, global TLD. We need the .africas already. Jeez, this is driving us crazy. But nonetheless, until next week, take care, and we'll chat to you online. Cheers. Wow, 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 wow.